Good evening and welcome to a debate between the two candidates for the Supreme Court in the April 5 election, Assistant Attorney General Joanne Kloppenburg, Supreme Court Justice David Prosser. I want to thank you all for coming. My name is Steve Walters. I'm a senior producer for Wisconsin Eye. For those of you who haven't had the pleasure to know Wisconsin Eye, think of us as the Wisconsin version of C-SPAN. I just want to also thank the co-sponsors here, Wispolitics.com, the Wisconsin Newspaper Association, the Wisconsin Radio Network, and the Wisconsin Law Journal. It'll be my pleasure to be a moderator, and I only have a very few rules. Number one, as was announced earlier, please turn off cell phones and personal devices. This is really hard for me because one of my grandchildren was supposed to be born in Denver today, so it's very hard for me to turn it off. But if I can do it, please do it, out of respect for the candidates, the importance of the office, and those around you. The second announcement, the candidates, the questions have been chosen by the sponsoring organizations, and so I will be asking them, we'll be taking turns. The format has been agreed to by the candidates, and further ado, let's begin. So, by flip of the coin, Assistant Attorney General Joanne Kloppenburg, thank you very much. You will be going first with an opening statement. Please, ma'am.
Thank you very much to the State Bar for hosting this forum and to Steve Walter for moderating. I have been privileged to represent all of the people of Wisconsin and to enforce the law on behalf of all of the people of Wisconsin as a prosecutor at the Department of Justice for over 20 years. My practice encompasses all aspects of civil litigation, including constitutional law, environmental law, appellate law, administrative law, and some criminal law. I have tried cases in circuit courts around the state and argued many times in the Court of Appeals and the Supreme Court, winning my most recent Supreme Court case last week. I got my bachelor's degree at Yale, my master's at Princeton, with scholarships and hard work all along the way. My husband and I got married, and the next day we went into the Peace Corps in Botswana in southern Africa, where I planned rural development projects. Upon our return to the States, I started the WIC program in two counties in upstate New York and was an associate dean at a small liberal arts college. We came to Madison in 1985, where we've lived in the same house ever since and raised our three children. I taught legal writing when I went to law school. I interned for Chief Justice Shirley Abrahamson and worked on special First Amendment projects with the late Professor Gordon Baldwin. Upon graduation, I was a law clerk for Chief Judge Barbara Crabb for a little of over a year and joined the Department of Justice in 1989. I've been teaching at UW Law School since 1990. I've coordinated the extern program at DOJ for law school students since 1995. I was on the board of Legal Action and what used to be called the Task Force for Battered Women. I'm now on the board of my neighborhood association. I'm a mentor with the Dane County Bar Association, and I'm an ESL tutor. My tutee was a 70-year-old Russian refugee, took her citizenship test a year ago December and passed it. The law affects all of us in ways that are profound and powerful. Our democracy depends in part on our willingness to accept the decisions that judges reach as lawful, whether we agree with them or not. That's why it's imperative that justices be independent and impartial, that justices decide cases on the law and the facts and not on partisan politics and personal vendettas. That's why it's time for a change on the court. My opponent, by his own words, his own conduct, and his campaign's own words, has indicated that he has a partisan approach to his role on the court. I have pledged from the start of this campaign to be independent and impartial, to restore people's confidence that the court will fulfill its constitutional role as a check and balance on the other branches of government. I will approach every case with an open mind and without having prejudged matters that go before the court. I will move the court forward beyond partisanship and beyond personal quarrels. I will be the kind of justice that you would want to hear your cases.
Thank you. Justice Prosser, your opening statement, please.
Thank you very much, Steve. Ladies and gentlemen, I too would like to thank the bar for sponsoring this debate. It is the ninth of 10 debates that I've been involved with. I feel very comfortable coming to this room. The art that you see on the walls is all part of the Wisconsin Sesquicentennial portfolio, which was my idea and one of my projects and part of my involvement in the community. I've had the enormous privilege of serving on the Wisconsin Supreme Court for 12 and a half years. Before that, I was a member of the legislature for 18 years, an elected district attorney up in Outagamie County, and I worked before that in the United States Department of Justice. On the court, I had participation in more than 900 reported decisions. I wrote 132 majority opinions, and probably at least double that number in concurrences and dissents. These have covered every area of Wisconsin law, from antitrust to zoning, everything in between, criminal procedure, civil procedure, everything that you can imagine. And I'm very proud to have written a number of decisions that really are landmark decisions in Wisconsin law. I think my tenure on the court has proven that I'm a centrist on the court, that I'm a scholar, that my decisions are moderate and reasoned, and I think that is why I have the support of 18 former presidents of this organization and many prominent state judges and attorneys throughout the state, as well as sheriffs and law enforcement. Now, my opponent doesn't want this race decided on qualifications or background or judicial experience because she doesn't have judicial experience. She's never been a member of the legislature. She's never held a public office. She never ran for public office before now. So she's sort of a stealth candidate. We don't really know what she thinks or how she would decide. And so the focus is not on these traditional ways of measuring judicial candidates. It's really a character attack on me, or it's a referendum on the governor or some legislation that might come. That's not the Wisconsin way to decide members of the Supreme Court.
Thank you. Just two reminders. Thank you, audience, for being here. But if we could hold the applause till the end of the 1 hour session, thank you very much. Also, just a reminder, these questions come from the sponsoring organizations. Ms. Kloppenberg, the first question for you, then you will get a chance to respond. Mr. Prosser, what, if any, responsibility do judges and justices have in instilling public confidence in our system of law?
Oh, the justices of the Supreme Court have the highest responsibility in instilling confidence that they will decide cases on the law and the facts. Justice Prosser just said, people will not know how I will decide. They know how he will decide. He has signaled as much. They know only that I will apply to the law, to the facts, without partisanship and without personal quarrels, that I am committed to restoring people's confidence in the independence and the impartiality of the court, and have run a campaign, thanks to public financing, that has focused on having real conversations with thousands of people around the state. We've put on 12,000 miles on my mother-in-law's Buick in the last few months, and we have connected with literally thousands of people, had real conversations about qualifications, backgrounds, approaches to the job, and how those differ between the two candidates. They are invested and informed in a way that people never have been in judicial elections, and they are gaining confidence through that conversation, through the extensive outreach that I have had to real people around the state, that by electing me, they will gain a justice who is truly independent and impartial.
Thank you. Do you need the question read again, Mr. Prosser?
I think I can handle it.
Thank you.
Throughout the entire campaign, I have been accused of partisanship and a lack of impartiality and prejudging cases. That's said over and over and over again, but there isn't any evidence of that. For example, the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel did a fact check or a political, what do they call it, something to test the credibility of statements that are being made by opponents or candidates. And here's what it said. We asked Kloppenberg campaign spokeswoman Melissa Mullican for evidence that Prosser has prejudged matters that are likely to be brought to the high court. And more specifically, which matters? Mullican said there were none. That's in yesterday's paper. There's never been any evidence. That the best compliment I receive is that I'm in the center of the court, that I'm an unpredictable vote, that I can vote with either side, and that people get a fair shake when I am sitting on the court. So it undermines the court, which must build up its credibility, when people like Joanne Kloppenberg constantly attack the integrity of the court. We all have to work to be impartial.
Do you wish a short response? You have that option. If not,
A very short response. Justice Prosser himself criticized all of the justices in the State versus Green decision in 2007 in writing and in public, and Justice Crooks felt compelled to issue in writing a criticism of Justice Prosser for denigrating the justices on the court and calling what he had written hogwash. It does not instill confidence in the people of Wisconsin to criticize other members of the court in public like that.
Next question for Mr. Prosser. This could be the last year for public financing for candidates. How do you think that could affect future races? How has public financing affected your campaign so far? Do you think the Impartial Justice Act should be amended, sir?
Yes. It has had a big effect. What I would say is the Impartial Justice Act is a very desirable piece of legislation in the sense that it permits any candidate to wage some kind of a campaign without spending lots and lots of time attempting to raise money through finance committees. That is a great relief. At the same time, there are uncertain rules that keep changing all the time, and more important, there is inadequate money. Now, for example, I have $300,000 to spend in this campaign. How do I conduct myself when Attorney Kloppenberg's allies are spending $3 million to try to discredit me and smear me? Something has to be done. I would move all of the money to the general election, and I would substantially increase the amount of that money if we're serious about public financing.
Ms. Kloppenberg?
As I noted before, public financing has enabled me to reach out and establish a broad and deep base of truly grassroots support around the state. People are invested in this race and informed about it in ways that they have not been when candidates had to go to the same people who give generously to political candidates every year. We have gotten our message out adequately and ably under the constraints of the public financing law. And it's true, you know, the public financing law clearly improves judicial elections because until now it has focused the candidates on conversations about our backgrounds, our qualifications, and our approaches to the job. Now, in the last 2 weeks of the election, there are third-party interest ads that are not regulated by the state. The first third-party ad was run for Justice Prosser before the primary. Now there are ads attacking both of us, supporting both of us. I haven't accused Justice Prosser of being allied with the folks who are attacking me, nor has he any evidence that that I am allied with third-party ads that are attacking him. Rather, they have a First Amendment right, like it or not, to run whatever ads they choose. And I have told all my supporters, we've called those ads out, and they know that they will not let those ads take the election away from individual voters who have made a commitment based on what they've learned from the candidates and their campaigns themselves.
Any short response?
Absolutely. One of the third-party ads, Prosser equals Walker. Now, that same theme is repeated over and over and over again on my opponent's website. She closely identifies with that. If she didn't identify with it, she would take those entries down. now there is a smear campaign, a really ugly, despicable ad. And she doesn't even have the integrity to say, take it down. I disassociate myself with it. That's wrong.
Next question, Ms. Kloppenberg. Does any contribution to a judicial campaign or any amount of spending by an outside group on a race for the Wisconsin Supreme Court constitute grounds for recusal, ma'am?
Right now, that's up for each justice to decide. And the third-party ads that have been run so far, of course, neither candidate has any control over them. They have a First Amendment right to run those ads. They're not my ads. They're not Justice Prosser's ads. They are third-party ads. And people can gauge the truth of the facts within them. What people tell me they want to hear about is not what's in those ads. They want to hear about what they've heard from my campaign, from my presentations around the state, which is, how can you restore the public's confidence in independence and impartiality on the court? And that's what I talk about with them. That's what they want to know. That's the kind of conversation I have been having with people around the state.
Mr. Prosser?
You cannot restore public confidence in the court by running a campaign that tries to politicize the court. This campaign, and it's so closely linked with Joanne Kloppenberg that it's obvious to everybody. This is a campaign that's being run as a referendum against the governor of the state and against certain legislation. Stop this governor, stop legislation, vote Kloppenberg. Now, she simply hasn't disassociated herself from that, and that's what this is really about. Now, to go to your question, there are going to be times when the amount of money that goes into a campaign should cause recusal, not solely when there is a legal contribution. That the maximum legal contribution to a candidate now is only $1,000. The maximum PAC contribution now to a Supreme Court candidate is only $1,000. I don't think the mere fact that contribution is made should cause someone to withdraw. After all, the Chief Justice received 341 contributions of $1,000 or more. And I don't think there's anything wrong, at least normally, in sitting in those cases. But if the contribution is so linked to a pending case that it creates sort of objectively questions, that's when someone ought to withdraw from the case.
Response, Ms. Kloppenberg?
And that is the rule that has been in place for many, many years, the subjective recusal rule, and there was no need for Justice Prosser to lead the court in adopting verbatim a rule written by entities that appear before the court, the Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce and the Realtors Association, saying that the amount of money by itself, that a judge need not recuse him or herself no matter how much money has been contributed toward that justice's reelection. The concerns that people have is that the subjective rule of recusal is not transparent enough, and I would recommend Justice Crooks's proposal that replaces that with an objective rule.
A follow-up question on this subject, Dave. You have been saying in recent appearances that she would have to get off some cases. Do you want to explain which cases you believe she might have to step back from?
The principles were set out in the Caperton decision in the United States Supreme Court. And basically, what happened in that case is an individual with a pending case before the West Virginia Supreme Court pumped $3 million, either directly or indirectly through independent expenditures or other kinds of expenditures, into the election of a new Chief Justice of the West Virginia Supreme Court. And it was all intended to decide one particular case. Okay, now, the United States Supreme Court, I think it was 5-4, said no, this judge had to step aside. He shouldn't have participated in the case. Now, what is the parallel? There are millions of dollars going into a campaign to elect Joanne Kloppenberg in the belief that she's going to stop the governor and stop the bill. The money is linked to a couple of individual cases. That is a violation of all the Caperton principles as I read the case.
Ms. Kloppenburg?
That charge is ludicrous. Anybody who has analyzed that case and is familiar with the facts of what's going on now would know that Caperton does not at all apply to what's going on in this race. And in fact, Justice Prosser's claims of collusion are based on innuendos that would never hold up in court. I have told people what Justice Prosser and his campaign have said. They started in December saying that his reelection would complement the work of Governor Scott Walker in the legislature. 2 weeks before the election, he has disavowed that claim, but he has not disavowed that or other similar statements by his campaign and himself that he has the most partisan background, that you can't take the you can take the man out of the legislature, but you can't take the legislature out of the man, and that this race is just about preserving a 4-3 conservative majority on the court. He has telegraphed that he will be part of that conservative majority. How can a justice know whether there'll be a conservative or liberal side to any case? I have been consistent in my message to the people of Wisconsin from the start that I will be independent and impartial, that I will not prejudge matters that come before the court, that I will not join any of the blocks that people perceive to be on the court, that I will approach every case with an open mind.
Response?
There's just a constant repetition that I am partisan, that she is impartial, but there's no record of evidence that she is impartial. The people I talk to say she is an inflexible ideologue in the cases she handles involving the Department of Natural Resources for the Department of Justice. My record is an open book. Her campaign manager can't even identify a single case here where I have prejudged it or acted in a partisan manner. And I can't speak. Sorry.
New question for Ms. Kloppenburg. Should candidates for the Wisconsin Supreme Court disclose their relationships to outside interest groups that campaign against their opponents? Please explain your answer.
Well, right now, candidates cannot collaborate at all with third-party groups, regardless what they're doing. So I believe in transparency, and I have a record too, and it's on full view at the Department of Justice. I have over 20 years of victories and settlements that have taken place around the state, and I have built up a reputation of being tough but fair and reasonable, listening to what the defendants have to say, reaching resolutions by settlement or after trial that everyone can accept. I don't know who Justice Prosser is hearing this from, perhaps Charlie Sykes in Milwaukee, but the people with whom I work are my endorsers, the people who litigate with me, the people who litigate against me. They all know that I will be independent and impartial, and they have that knowledge based on the record that I have developed at the Department of Justice under 4 attorneys general from both parties, Democratic and Republican.
Response, Mr. Prosser?
I don't believe Charlie Sykes is an attorney and practices law in environmental cases in Wisconsin courts. I have talked to people who do fall into that category, and they've told me that that's Joanne's reputation and what they have seen themselves. Collaboration. Joanne is entirely correct that a candidate cannot collaborate in any way with the people sponsoring independent expenditures. I don't want to hear. I mean, some people come up to me and say, "Can we make some yard signs?" And I say, "I don't want to hear anything about that. You do your own thing, but collaboration is against the law, and I'm going to honor the law."
Any response?
No.
Okay. Question for Mr. Prosser: do you believe that a candidate for the Wisconsin Supreme Court has a constitutional right to make false statements about another candidate during the election? Please explain.
A constitutional right to make false statements
about another candidate.
We're operating under the First Amendment. There is broad latitude given to statements of political speech under the First Amendment. There are lots of statements that people might find deplorable that are going to be protected by the First Amendment. I don't think I would want to come down in terms of false statements that are objectively false, but if this is an allusion to the recent Gableman case, it really involves whether the statements that were attacked as false violated the rule promulgated by the Supreme Court in light of the First Amendment. So I've explained this many times. There are two critical sentences. One is a sentence that says you shall not violate, say anything, either for yourself or against your opponent, where the statement is objectively false. The second sentence is aspirational. That's when you should not make statements that together put your opponent in a false light or put yourself in a false light. And I think what we were talking about is probably a violation of the second sentence, which carried no penalty.
Response?
Of course, judicial candidates have no constitutional right to make false statements about the other candidate. When I go around the state, people do perceive the Gableman ad to have been a lie, and the 3-3 tie as to whether proceed with the claim against the Gableman ad to have fallen along partisan lines. Certainly, most people believed that that case should have proceeded to trial as to whether those four statements as a whole package, that whole ad as a package, constituted a lie. That's what the three justices who decided against Justice Prosser determined, that it was like summary judgment on the stipulated facts. You couldn't decide one way or another whether the ad was a lie. There were additional facts that were brought up in oral argument that was stated by the justices in their 3-3 decision, and they said that it should have then proceeded to a trial to determine whether reasonable people perceived the ad to have been a lie.
Did you have any response?
I've heard my opponent say time and time again this case should have been sent back for a trial. The facts of the case were stipulated. There is no need to go to a jury trial when you have stipulated facts and the issue is solely a question of law. False statements. There's no right, she says, to make false statements. Then you better clean up your campaign, because it is full not only of things putting me in a false light, there are some actual false statements, and if you want me to create a list for you, I will be happy to do so.
Next question for Ms. Kloppenberg. What is your view of how the Supreme Court should view the Wisconsin Constitution with respect to the federal Constitution, and specifically, as a Supreme Court justice, would you base your decisions on the state Constitution rather than the federal Constitution?
Well, there are some provisions in the federal and state constitutions that overlap. There are some provisions that are only in the state Constitution. The federal Constitution is a floor, not a ceiling. The state Constitution should be interpreted independently from, but not inconsistently with, the U.S. Constitution.
Mr. Prosser?
We're talking about the new federalism. It seems to me those who would like to have a more powerful court, expand the power of the judiciary, love to look to the Wisconsin Constitution as a place where they depart from the Federal Bill of Rights or other provisions in the Federal Constitution and kind of expand on that. I think that's extremely dangerous. It really is. First of all, it creates confusion. But as few as four members of the Supreme Court are able to put a whole new gloss on things. I think that power can be tremendously abused, and I simply do not favor it. Now, if you are able to say that there's something in the Wisconsin Constitution that by its words and by its concept is different from the federal Constitution, then we might have to make an exception. I certainly accept that. But we should not depart from the federal Constitution every time four people want to come to a particular conclusion.
Any response?
No.
Okay. Next question for Mr. Prosser. At what point does administration of the court system by the Chief Justice differ from administration of that system by the Supreme Court as a whole? And which would be the most beneficial system?
Well, I have no dispute at all and this goes back to 1999 when I stood up and defended the Chief Justice. I have no dispute at all that the Chief Justice in the Constitution is the chief officer of the entire judiciary. Now, having said that, it seems to me the Chief Justice really ought to confer with the rest of the court. We're all statewide office holders. The Chief Justice ought to seek our advice and counsel from time to time and share information so that each member of the court can contribute in a full and meaningful way to the operation of the court. Money should not be spent on special projects without some heads up to the rest of the court. So I support the Chief Justice. I think that the danger here is our Chief Justice is different from other Chief Justices in that the Chief Justice is serving by length of tenure. And that can go on and on and on. I think that provision of our law ought to be reconsidered or at least thought about, because the Chief Justice is not there by popular selection, or there's no term limits. It can go on forever, and that creates some dangers.
Response, ma'am?
I think the gist of Justice Prosser's response is that the duties are set by the Constitution and by rules, and they are being followed, but that the justices are having a hard time getting along with each other. And I think that there's plenty of responsibility to go around, but Justice Prosser has been on the bench for 12 and a half years, has had an opportunity to show some leadership, move the court forward beyond their disagreements, and be a more collegial court who can work together on these simple administrative matters. And he hasn't done so, and it is time to put new blood on the court. I can bring that new blood by listening respectfully to all the justices who are on the court, by focusing on the positive that they all bring to the court, focusing on whatever narrow issue is being decided at the time. And I've found in my experience of managing attorneys that results in a better product and a more collegial atmosphere.
Any response, Mr. Prosser?
This is just pablum. Any suggestion that I don't listen to colleagues, that I don't try to work with colleagues, that I don't often serve as the mediator among colleagues is just wrong. It is historically inaccurate, and it is wrong. There are some problems on the court. I think we would be well served if we turned to people outside the court to examine the operations of the court for efficiency and personality in every other way. But they have to be truly objective people.
A follow-up just on that. Who would you recommend as someone to come in and take an outside look at the court, Justice Prosser?
I honestly don't have an instant answer to that. The Chief Justice has so many contacts with the Center for State Courts, the American Bar Association, that some of the traditional people that you might want to look to may not quite be the right people. You have to bring in people of great stature who are going to be respected by all the members of the court. And if they say, De Prosser, you've got to do this and this and this better than you're doing, I would say, fine. But other members of the court have to be receptive as well.
Ms. Kloppenburg, on the idea that we need an outside person to come in and look at the court, is that something you could support?
These are adults. I think that if people are respectful of each other and listening to each other and focused on the job they're there to do, they can figure out how to work together.
Okay, that was a follow-up question, so now we'll go back in order for you, Ms. Kloppenburg. Do you believe that there is a difference between a political liberal or conservative and a judicial liberal or conservative? If yes, what's the difference, please?
There certainly is a difference between a political liberal and a political conservative. As far as whether you've got political and judicial, I have kept my personal and political beliefs aside for the 22 years I've been working at the Department of Justice, because my job has been to represent the interests of all the people of Wisconsin and enforce the law. And my judicial philosophy is not to participate in a liberal or a conservative bloc, to not look at the law in a liberal or conservative way, but to listen respectfully to the parties, to do complete and comprehensive research, to apply the rule of law to the facts without personal or political bias, and to write decisions that are well-grounded and well-reasoned and easy to understand so everyone knows what the decisions say and what the law is.
Mr. Prosser?
I'm not quite sure I know what the difference is between a political liberal and a judicial liberal. I define myself as a judicial conservative while acknowledging that I'm a political conservative as well. But a judicial conservative really sees a much more restrained role for the court. In other words, we have to make new law once in a while in the common law. It has to evolve and develop as new situations come up. But I very much want to honor precedent whenever possible. I don't want to interpret, the new federalism we just talked about a few minutes ago, or the supervisory provision of the state constitution, or Article 1, Section 9, trying to create a remedy for every wrong, as really carte blanche reaching out to empower the court to do all kinds of things, to make policy. We should not be trying to fill every void on policy that's been left by the legislature. It's a much more restrained role, respecting the policy-making decisions of other branches of government.
Any response?
I agree with Justice Prosser. The precedent is owed a great deal of different deference, and that when the court needs to develop from precedent, they need to do so in a transparent way so that people understand where the court's coming from and where it's going. And I would like to note that Justice Prosser himself has filled gaps that the legislature has left in dissent by creating a statute of limitations where there was one, wanting to create a deliberative privilege where there is one, wanting a different result because he found the result under the statutes to be unfair. The proper response is to tell the legislature, this is a result that's problematic, you fix it.
Thank you. New question, Justice Prosser. It is often difficult for the public to know very much about candidates for the Supreme Court. In Wisconsin, judicial races are nonpartisan. Candidates are not identified with any particular political party. Is there a value to voters having a way to identify the politics of judges? Question one. That is part of this. Question two, is that value outweighed by the voters' expectation that judges will be impartial? And finally, based on your experience as a candidate, should Wisconsin continue to require that its Supreme Court candidates be nonpartisan? A three-parter.
I'm a senior citizen. You may need to help me here. Joanne and I have engaged in, we're going to have 10 debates. And we're not trying to hide anything from each other. Mm-hmm. The difference I have is I tell people what my sort of personal philosophy is and what my judicial philosophy is, what my political background is. I don't try to hide my views. What I say is that when I was really honored to be appointed to the Supreme Court in 1998, I tried very hard to step back from a partisan role and be right in the center of the court, to be a political moderate with sound judgments, and not to attend political events or provide any evidence that I was acting in a partisan way. I don't think there's any evidence to refute the fact that I've succeeded at that. Joanne's campaign manager was given the opportunity, give us some cases, and the answer is, there are none. So going out, having people who read these opinions evaluate, that's why it's so important, for example, that 18 former state bar presidents are endorsing me. Now, not all of those people are conservative by any stretch of the imagination. They're saying, this guy's a good judge.
Ms. Kloppenberg?
I'm trying to remember the question. I think that that the judicial elections should continue to be nonpartisan, and that that it is important that politics and partisanship do not intrude into the judicial campaigns, and that they don't intrude onto the court, and that a candidate's political and personal beliefs are not germane to their approach to being a justice unless they make it so. And Justice Prosser, by his words, has made his political affiliation germane by reaching out to a narrow segment of voters who will vote for him because they know how he will decide to preserve the conservative majority. I have reached out from the start to all voters, and my message to them is that all they can expect from me is that I will decide cases on the law and the facts, free of political and personal bias.
Any response?
My opponent has no record of deciding cases on an impartial basis. She alleges, I'm going to be impartial, but has no evidence to demonstrate over a long period of time that she can do that. You go down to the Capitol, Steve, and you see picketers marching around the Capitol that say, stop the bill, vote Kloppenberg. And that's on her Facebook. I mean, that's the entire message of this campaign that gives it legs. And, well, I'm out of time.
Next question, and it's related to this. There is often debate about whether Wisconsin should appoint or elect Supreme Court justices. So I believe it goes to you, Ms. Kloppenberg, your position?
Right. Well, and we've talked about this, and we actually agree that there are pros and cons to both kinds of ways of obtaining justices. Appointing justices is not free of political influence. We saw in Iowa where there was a unanimous decision by all the justices who had been appointed on a controversial matter. Three of the justices were up for an up or down vote, and outside's interests, outside of Iowa, flooded the state with money and ads, and those three justices were recalled. A justice should feel free to rule in cases without fear of being recalled under pressure from outside interests. Here in Wisconsin, we elect judges. We've seen that there has also been problematic influence of huge expenditures in prior judicial elections directly to candidates and to third parties. The Impartial Justice Act is a very important first step towards improving judicial elections and tamping down the influence of excessive expenditures. Clearly, we still need to deal with third-party expenditures, which I've already said, because of public financing. I think we've got a base of informed voters who will make up their minds directly from information from the candidates and not from third-party ads. But I do believe it's important that judges and justices be accountable to the people of Wisconsin, and you do that through elections.
Thank you. Mr. Prosser?
It seems to me there's a theory out there that money influences votes on the Wisconsin Supreme Court. Is that theory substantiated by the facts? I mean, that theory really underlies the Impartial Justice Act. I don't think that theory has really been established. But we're trying something new. The maximum contributions to the campaign is $1,000 in either PAC or personal. And I just simply don't think that is influencing things. Now, elected versus appointed. This campaign is the most politicized campaign in the history of the Wisconsin judiciary. It is making the case for judicial appointment rather than judicial election. I think that's absolutely tragic. And I think, particularly if I am not reelected because millions of dollars are pumped in to a consistent effort, A, to discredit me and destroy my reputation, and B, to convey the view that she is going to cast a vote in specific cases in a particular way, that is going to destroy judicial independence and take away the right of election from the people of Wisconsin.
Any response, ma'am?
People are expressing their ideas and engaging in exchange of ideas on Facebook and in rallies around the state in ways that many people are finding historic. People tell me they understand that people will have political differences and that those differences should be resolved through the processes that are in place in the legislature and the executive branches for addressing political differences, but that politics and partisanship do not belong on the court. They are alarmed by Justice Prosser's statements of partisanship. They're supporting me not because of how I will decide cases, but because I will decide them based on the rule of the facts and be independent and impartial.
Thank you. Question for Mr. Prosser. Governor Walker's proposed 2011-13 state budget increases money for portions of the criminal justice system with new hiring of public defenders, increased pay to retain prosecutors, and increased reimbursement of county interpreter costs. Yet, the governor's proposed budget accomplishes this with a reduction of funds for civil legal needs of the poor, legal aid, and judicare, and by eliminating the public financing option for candidates. Do you have any comments on how these changes, if they're passed, will affect the legal profession and its impact on the public in the future?
Well, I'm for more money for prosecutors, public defenders, courts. I'm against less money for all of the organizations like Legal Action of Wisconsin and similar organizations that help the poor. It's a little hard sitting in the judicial branch, which has no money, to fashion these things. I think it's essential for you talked about interpreters. That is our situation on interpreters is really dictated by federal law. We get no federal money to implement that federal law. Senator Herb Kohl has worked on it in the past, and I strongly support his efforts to deliver some federal money to help us with interpreters. But we can't always turn to federal money. I don't know what the answer is, but all these goals are good, and I would hate to boost one at the expense of the other. I mean,
Ms. Kloppenberg?
I agree with Justice Prosser. To the extent that parties are represented by attorneys, the justice system works better. And certainly it's a legislative decision as to how to balance where you provide additional representation and where you don't. The judicial system will suffer if you take money away either on the civil or the criminal side from providing representation for people and providing paying enough so that people have good representation. I think that the court has before and can continue to support innovative pilot programs run by bar associations around the state that help fill the gaps that might be left by whatever budget turns out to be passed.
Any response, Mr. Prosser?
I don't think so.
Question for Ms. Kloppenberg. In an earlier debate, I think it was in the last week, you were asked about how well the Office of Lawyer Regulation is working. And I think you use the term uneven. Can you explain that? How should ORL be improved?
Well, I believe what I'm hearing from people, lawyers and non-lawyers, is that OLR's performance is uneven in terms of the sanctions or that are meted out for different kinds of infractions. I think that people need to have confidence that lawyers are treated consistently, that complaints are investigated promptly and fully, and that lawyers also are treated in accordance with the requirements of due process. And given that there are public perceptions that OLR might fall short in some of these areas, a review by the court would probably be helpful.
Mr. Prosser?
Well, as you know, there were some articles in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel that were quite critical of the Office of Lawyer Regulation. Some of the things that were being criticized were not known to the Supreme Court. We had a lot of discussion about it, and certainly there is room for improvement. There was some discussion from a state senator about an audit. There might be other ways to review the operations. By and large, I have a lot of confidence in the Office of Lawyer Regulation. And of course, it operates solely based on it's part of the money is part of the dues that comes in large part, And in these times, it's a little hard to ask for more money for members of the bar because these are not the greatest times for the bar. But there's room for improvement, and specifically, there is room for improvement in trying to speed up the process.
Any response, Ms. Klumper? No. Okay, then this will be the last question before our closing statements, and it'll go to Mr. Prosser. Can you describe an instance where you, when you have written an opinion or taken a legal position contrary to what you would personally prefer, but which was correct under the applicable law?
Well, I remember one a tort case. It was a Lynn Laufenberg case, and I'm trying to remember the exact facts, but someone was injured, I think through medical malpractice, and we had trouble trying to get relief to the relatives. Originally, I voted yes. We've got to give them relief. That's a fair result. And the case was assigned to me. When we started to write the case and interpret the statute that determined who was eligible to receive money, it just didn't follow through. So I felt badly about that. You don't feel good when there's been some tragedy and you apply the statute in a way that doesn't produce any good for the injured party. But you can't just, we talked about this the other night, Joanne, you can't let your empathy just rewrite the law, whether it's an insurance policy or a jury verdict or jury instructions or something like that. I mean, you have to try to follow the law. You can't just do what you'd like to do.
Thank you. Ms. Kloppenberg?
Well, I remember a case long ago, and I find that the externs in our department encounter this. When I was doing prisoner civil rights litigation, when I first joined the Department of Justice, there was a notice of claim statute that prevented a prisoner from bringing his claim. And I wanted to waive that requirement because of the factual circumstances. And I was told by my supervisor that our job is not to waive statutory requirements. We must uphold them, that that's what's in the interest of the state. And I understood that, and I find myself having to go through that same exercise with our externs, that what you might feel might be personally fair in a case is not in the interest of the state of Wisconsin as a whole. And I have had decisions in environmental law that are not different from my personal beliefs, because my personal beliefs are that the law must be upheld. But for example, the decision that I won last week, some environmentalists are unhappy, but I do believe that that my position advocated what the law required, and the Supreme Court agreed. And the folks aligned with me, like Georgia Pacific and the Paper Council and other folks who are members of WMC, understood too that, you know, this was the way the law should be. And the petitioner in that case, who met me at oral argument, is now one of my endorsers. So it just shows that that there's an opportunity to get along with everybody, regardless of the position you might be taking in a particular case.
Thank you very much. We've now reached a time in the forum where each candidate is allotted a couple minutes for a closing debate. The same coin toss at the start has decided that Justice Prosser, you will go first, followed by Assistant Attorney General Kloppenberg. Your closing statement, sir?
Well, ladies and gentlemen, it has been an enormous privilege serving on the Wisconsin Supreme Court, and I would like to continue that work. I love it. I think I do it pretty well. This campaign is historic because it is the most political campaign for the Supreme Court that we have ever seen. We're not waging this campaign based on the relative qualifications of the candidates or on their judicial philosophy. We're waging it on completely different issues. Stop Walker, stop the bill, vote Kloppenberg. That is a referendum on the wrong subject, because this is a position where hundreds and hundreds of cases are going to be decided over the next 10 years, not just a couple of cases in the near term. I think my opponent is trying to cloud the issues in this campaign. She is attributing statements and actions of others to me unfairly. She's taking, as she has done tonight, some statements that I've made and putting them, or taking them out of context. And there are false statements. And there are smear campaigns. This is not the Wisconsin way. It is really quite shocking what should be happening. I think that the people of Wisconsin want someone who has been a judge, who has demonstrated their judgment over a long period of time. They don't want a stealth candidate. They don't want an extreme candidate. They want a moderate candidate with sound judgment. And I hope they'll vote for me on April 5th.
Thank you.
My broad experience before going to law school, during law school, and since going to law school, my experience of 22 years of being in the trenches of the court system around the state of Wisconsin uniquely qualify me to be the justice of the Supreme Court. This election is about the future. It is about moving the court forward, away from partisanship, away from personal quarrels. It is about restoring people's confidence in the independence and impartiality of the court. I will approach every case with an open mind, without having prejudged matters before the court, without having determined which block to, you know, I belong to. I will move the court forward away from partisanship, away from personal quarrels. I will be the kind of justice that you would want to hear your cases, and I hope that I will earn your vote on April 5th. Thank you very much.
Thank you. On behalf of the State Bar of Wisconsin and co-sponsors Wisconsin Newspaper Association, WisPolitics.com, Wisconsin Radio Network, and the Wisconsin Law Journal, I want to thank you, Justice Prosser, Assistant Attorney General Kloppenberg, for this forum. Polls open at 7 a.m. on April 5th, although absentee ballots can already be cast. Today, the Government Accountability Board projected only a 20% turnout. That's pretty low, so let's get that higher. So I'm going to thank you for the forum. This event will be rebroadcast on Wisconsin Eye tomorrow. And audience, you've been very respectful. Now we can thank both of them.
Watch out.